The New Testament lesson today is in Acts chapter 7, and it's printed in your bulletin, I'm going to begin in verse 54. When they heard these things, they became enraged and ground their teeth at Stephen. But filled with the Holy Spirit, Stephen gazed into heaven and saw the glory of God and Jesus standing at the right hand of God. "Look," he said, "I see the heavens opened and the Son of Man standing at the right hand of God." But they covered their ears. With a loud shout, all rushed together against him. Then they dragged him out of the city and began to stone him. And the witnesses laid their coats at the feet of a young man named Saul. And they were stoning Stephen. He prayed, "Lord Jesus, receive my spirit." Then he knelt down and cried out in a loud voice, "Lord, do not hold this sin against them." When he had said this, he died. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Happy Mother's Day. Obviously, this is the passage that you choose for Mother's Day. Obviously, the stoning of Stephen is the best choice for a Mother's Day sermon. Clearly, Stephen is a character who sort of comes out of nowhere. He's introduced a chapter earlier. They have some need within this new community of managers, more or less, who are able to divide things out and get things done to keep the apostles free to teach and all that. So they ordain seven people to become deacons of the church, and Stephen is sort of chief among them. And so as a deacon ordained in new authority, he starts going out in the synagogue like all the time, and there he is testifying about Jesus, and he is talking about how other people need to follow him, and he's very loud and outspoken about these sorts of things, which naturally sparks some trouble. Which we see here. He gets in trouble with the authorities of the day. And so when they come to him and begin to confront him about this, he preaches, and it's in the chapter before this, if you want to read it, all in chapter 7 on your own. It is this epic sermon that starts sort of at the very beginning of Jewish tradition and works all the way forward. And he really goes into great detail about this. So he begins with Abraham and how he was called out of his homeland and goes into a new one, and how along the way he was promised a child, Isaac, who came to be, and Isaac had Jacob, and Jacob had 12 sons, but the 11 sons turned against Joseph, and they beat him up, threw him in a pit, sold him into slavery. He winds up in Egypt, and then through some working of God, he actually winds up providing for the rest of his family throughout a famine in Egypt. And that's how the Israelites come into Egypt. They live there for 400 years, Stephen says. And then Moses comes along, who is almost destroyed, but then he's not, and he's raised in Pharaoh's courts. And then he kills an Egyptian, and the Israelites won't listen to him. They're afraid of Moses, and so he flees for 40 years. And then God gets a hold of him, makes him a liberator of the people, and he comes back to Egypt. And the people still don't listen to him, and they're still not sure about him, but he brings him out of Egypt anyway, and it keeps going. Stephen says that as soon as Moses turns his back, the people make this golden calf, which is like a metaphor, he says, for Israel's entire relationship with God. Every chance they get, they're turning away to other gods, even in the midst of Joshua under his leadership. And even when they have King David and King Solomon, who builds the temple, they still constantly turning away, and he finally turns the sermon on its axis, and he's got it. He says, you know what all these things have in common? At every single point along the way, the people resisted the Spirit of God, and they were betrayers, and they killed all the prophets who were speaking about what God was doing. And that's when all these people pick up the stones. That's when they're going to shut this guy up once and for good. It's kind of a dark story, isn't it? Martyrdom is that way. And it is. It would be a terrible, tragic story if it wasn't for the gospel. The gospel is sort of backwards like that, too. It's a tragedy in the way that it's supposed to go. And then, of course, it turns upside down and it turns out to be a great victory. Instead of a tragic arc, it's a comedic part. You can't keep the man down. He keeps coming back. And so this, Stephen's martyrdom, has the same sort of shape to it. It would be a tragedy, except that the gospel keeps going, that Stephen doesn't end here, that he's not stopped. And so in this way, he is following most closely the way of Jesus. He's even echoing his words. And after Stephen, and much molding themselves after Stephen, the church sort of makes Stephen the prototype of what it means to be the best sort of Christian there is. To be martyred was considered a great honor. Can you imagine? Being killed was considered the highest honor that you could attain in the early church. It's backwards. So I admit it. This is a dark passage for Mother's Day. I admit that a stoning is impolite pulpit conversation. And I admit that I probably should be talking about Mary or Sarah or Hannah or some other biblical mother that would make a better sermon. I admit that. But today, I wanted to challenge us with a real picture of actual motherhood that has all the shading and depth of the gospel. And I want to do so because the mothers in my life, and I mean both my biological mother and all of those other women who have laid their hand on my life throughout the years and taught me and all of those things, they are made of strong stuff. They don't fit exactly the mold of the meek and mild caregivers that Hallmark can tend to over-sentimentalize. You know what I'm talking about? Beautiful commercials and all that sort of thing. Makes for a great commercial. But to me, it doesn't capture the truth of what a mother is. The mothers in my life have been strong women, driven and good and powerful. They have taught me, they loved me, they corrected me, they chided me, they guided me, and they've challenged me. And the mothers of our faith, if you have read our history, you will find that the mothers of our faith, these Christians, were like that. They were strong women. They were made of stern stuff like Stephen was. And they are giving of their lives for the benefit of those they call their children. And one of the first things I want to point out is that mothers give their great wisdom. That's what Stephen does in that whole sermon, right? He's sort of showing off his knowledge, but he's also trying to get through to them. Look, do you see the pattern here? This is what I'm trying to say to you. It's the same pattern that we keep repeating over and over again. We've got to break out of it. That's what Jesus Christ will allow us to do. We can break out of it. After Stephen's martyrdom, the scene in Acts sort of shifts over to Paul. Paul becomes the next great figure in the story and they carry it out. There's another missionary who is, at the time, almost equal with Paul. His name is Apollos. And if you've read a little bit about him in the New Testament, you'll find out that he's a great missionary also. Maybe even rival Paul, and in some places was even, it almost felt like competing with him if you read 1 Corinthians. But here's the thing. Apollos was sort of a new convert to the faith. He didn't come to it naturally. As a matter of fact, he was taught by someone very much like Paul. It was a fellow tent maker and a Jewish person, and her name was Priscilla. Apollos learned everything that he knew about the faith from a woman named Priscilla. We don't know much about Priscilla, but there is a theory among scholars, and I particularly like this one, that she might have written the book of Hebrews, because out of all of the books of our Bible, in the New Testament at least, there is only one that is anonymous, that is written without name, without signature, and that is the book of Hebrews. If Paul wrote it, you can be sure Paul's name would have been on it, because Paul put his name on everything. If it was Peter, if it was Luke, if it was anyone else, they would have put his name on it because that would have helped it pass around the new kingdom. So why would you leave the name off? Well, at the time, if it was written by a woman, that might put it as a lower status category. But I'm telling you, out of all of the books in the New Testament, some of the most beautiful Greek, some of the most complex thought and the deepest theology, the book of Hebrews. What if in her great wisdom, it was the writing of Priscilla, the teacher of Apollos. Paul calls out another bunch of women when he writes a letter to his disciple Timothy. He wants to remind them, so he invokes the names of his mother Eunice and his grandmother Lois. What does he say about them? Who taught you the faith, who passed on the faith to you. All throughout the New Testament, we find women. And this is carried on throughout church history. Think of Lottie Moon. We think of her for missionary workings in China, but she advanced to the greatest degree that she could get in her own education, and then was a champion of education all over the world, especially for girls. Lottie Moon, throughout our history, and especially in the Christian tradition, women have been about passing on the wisdom of the ages to those who come after them. So us, how many of us will be able to say, well, you know what, if it wasn't for a woman, I wouldn't be here today? How many of us learned the faith because of our mothers in our lives, whether they were Sunday school teachers here or in the home? I like to go to Sunday school classes. I like to go to the young ones, the little kid ones. More often than not, it's usually a woman teaching those classes. And I love to watch them teach because they're putting the complex things of the gospel in ways that these young minds can grasp and get their hands around. It's a beautiful thing to watch. It's watching the next generation grapple and grasp their faith. They're pouring their wisdom into us, these women. And they're making us more than what we were before. So there was a lady in Georgia at the church I used to work at. Her name was Gloria. And she was the organist, Bill. She was pretty well on in her years. She was above 80, but she hadn't lost a step. And she was sharp and witty, and I loved talking with her. So we were sitting around one Sunday morning. It was in the season of Advent. We were getting close to Cantata time. And so we were chatting, and she was, we were about a week away from the Cantata, and she was sort of confiding in me. She would let loose with me, and she said, you know what? It's a hard thing this Christmas time because there's a lot of big pieces of music that we do on Sunday mornings. And I don't know whose stupid idea it was to put the cantata at night, but that's a stupid idea. These vocalists, they're going to have tired voices and they're not going to be able to sing and all this kind of stuff. I don't know who came up with it. So I had to stop it and I owned up to it. And I said, Gloria, that was my idea to put it at night. And she looked at me and she goes, oh. Well, that was a stupid idea. And I laughed, and she laughed, and we went on from it. We did the cantata at night, and it went fine. I think they still do it right now. But you will notice that both the cantatas that we have done here since I've been here have been on Sunday mornings. I've learned from her wisdom. But I like that story because it's not just about her passing on wisdom. It's about her courage. Because in that part of South Georgia, you don't disagree with the preacher, and you don't confront someone face-to-face. That is considered rude, crass. But Gloria did. She didn't care. She didn't mind stepping on the preacher's toes. She didn't mind who she said anything to anybody to. And I admire that about her. I love that about her. I appreciated that from her, that she didn't mind just telling me what she thought. That was stupid. Don't do that. There's something in that. Telling the truth, no matter the consequence. Stephen did that. You remember the story when he was telling them, look, your problem is God is up to something here and you're too busy with your own machinations that you're missing it. And here you're becoming killers and persecutors and betrayers. And when they pick up the stones, he's still not deterred. He says, I see Christ with God even now. And even when the stones start flying, I'm reminded of that Tom Petty song. Stand my ground, and I won't back down. He won't back down. History is full of these kinds of stories. In the 3rd century, 203 A.D., there were two ladies, two young mothers, one named Perpetua and the other named Felicitas. Perpetua was a noblewoman who had just given birth, and she was nursing her own child when she was arrested for being a Christian, thrown in prison, threatened with death. And a slave girl named Felicitas was with her in the prison. She was 8 months pregnant. And they were facing down their incoming doom. And their earnest prayer was that Felicitas would give birth. And she did. She gave birth before it would happen. And she gave her child to another Christian mother to raise. But they did not back down. And they faced down horrible things in the arena. And they eventually died for their faith in one another's arms. These two young mothers who just would not back down from being Christian. It's a tragic story, except in the world of the gospel. Because the old saying was, the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. So many came to the faith because of Perpetua and Felicitas. They said, if these young women are willing to die for this faith, then what does it offer them? What is it about this faith that keeps them so strong? And they found out. And they became Christians themselves. Why are they willing to die? Over the years, the martyrs have come. And it draws people's attention. Why are they willing to die for this? And that's the truth, isn't it? Our mothers, they sacrifice for us. Maybe they don't have to die for us. Maybe they don't face down a lion's den. But they give of themselves and they give of their lives for us. I am still in awe of all that Gigi had to go through to bring our girls to us today. She had gestational diabetes both times, which means she had to severely alter her diet and give herself shots for most of the pregnancies. And she did it. She did it because of her willingness to sacrifice her own comfort and well-being so that our children might have life. And I'm so grateful that she did. Mothers stay up all night with their sick children and do laundry at 2 a.m. when need be. They drive their kids to school and to practice and to the movies and every which way. They give up their last bite of apple pie, and for the life of me, I don't know a greater act of love than that. They go to dance practices and all recitals and sports practices and every game. They give of their self and they put their children ahead of their own well-being. And I'm telling you that it's not meekness, that is strength, that is power, and that is grace. Standing up for the right, even if it means you take a hit for it. And so often, mothers do it with grace. Grace that boggles my mind. Stephen, after they started throwing the rocks, he called out in a loud voice and he said, Lord, do not hold this sin against them. Can you imagine? With your very last breath, forgiving those who are killing you. What kind of power is that? That's the power of Jesus Christ, to allow someone to be true to who they are and not swayed or changed by what is coming after them. Something reminded me earlier in the week to look up the story of Anne Frank again. Must have been the anniversary, I guess, of the release of her diary. When I was in high school, I was in a production of the Diary of Anne Frank. If you've ever seen that play, you know it's kind of intense. It ends with her family being seized and going off to a concentration camp, which she'll never return from. But her father does. He goes back into that storehouse where they made their life hiding out from the Nazis. And he finds her diary and reads a passage, and that's how the play ends. And it's a powerful, haunting phrase that he reads out of her diary. And she wrote just before she was arrested at 15 years old. In spite of everything, I still believe that people are really good at heart. I can't imagine that kind of grace and courage. And so in that way, maybe Anne Frank is a mother to us all, that 15-year-old girl. The title of today's sermon comes from the greatest movie that has ever been made. I don't know what you're thinking, but it's The Princess Bride. If you were thinking anything else, that's the wrong answer. It's The Princess Bride. And it's essentially a story about these two young lovers, Wesley and Buttercup. And Wesley is presumed dead at one point, and Buttercup becomes a princess bride. She's going to marry a prince. Until Wesley returns miraculously, he finds her and they're finally reunited, and he said, "My love, why didn't you wait for me?" And she said, "Well, I thought you were dead." And he says, "Death cannot stop true love. All it can do is delay it for a while." Cue the music, kissing scene, beautiful. You know you need the rest of the movie. It's amazing. Fantastic film, required reading for all of you to hear today. Death cannot stop true love. That is the gospel truth today. It couldn't stop Jesus. Death couldn't stop Stephen or Priscilla or Felicitas or little Anne Frank. And the powers of this world, no matter how they try, they could not stop the church, and they cannot now. Even in the midst of persecution, still, we persisted. Today is Mother's Day, and it is a day for all women, not just those who are related to us, but all women who show us courage and strength and sacrifice, all those who have given of themselves. And so today we honor our mothers by persisting in our faith. No matter what the powers that be might attempt, the love of God cannot fail. No matter what is thrown at us, we will not be shaken or beaten down. We will carry out what our mothers gave us, and we will continue in their wisdom and their courage, their grace, and their hope. We will never stop speaking love.